This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Always a pleasure on Wednesday to welcome in Leah Hextall. How are you doing? How was your week?
My week has been fine, but I am, like the rest of the NHL world, a little shocked this morning.
Yeah, Vegas, let's go of Gerard Gallant after four straight losses and a team that probably hasn't lived up to expectations, and that's always very dangerous. Many people had them coming out of the Western Conference, and they still can, but this little losing streak is just something that I guess just could not be tolerated. But you looked at the totality of the job that he's done there in Vegas, it's kind of just hard to believe that in the third year of that team's existence that's really seen nothing but success and would still make the playoffs if the season ended today, part ways with their coach.
Absolutely. You look at Gallant's resume since he's been with the Vegas Golden Knights. You have the inaugural season where he brought them together to take them to the Stanley Cup final. And then last year, really, you know, a very controversial ending to their season in the first round to San Jose in that Game 7, not to his fault. And he's a coach for the All-Star Game this year.
Right.
Whether or not that's going to happen or not now, it likely won't. The NHL is going to have to do something about it. But we're talking about an all-star caliber coach and known as one of the best out there. But I would say, Don, that while many people and myself, when I saw the headline cross my screen, I went, "You're kidding me." I verbally said something out loud because I could not believe this was going on. But I would suggest that this is not a knee-jerk reaction like many people are thinking because they flipped the calendar year, they won two, lost four. This is not necessarily about a four-game losing skid. This is about a team in the Vegas Golden Knights, to your point, that is underachieving. They have the talent to be better than what they are. And the fact is, we're talking about a team that was first in their division and now is just battling for a wild card spot in a very competitive time of the season. But more so than that is that you have a coach that management decides they're not getting enough out of these players right now. There's Pete DeBoer sitting there, a coach that has such an exquisite resume with every team that he has been with, including getting teams that are underachieving to achieve. Is he going to be available come the summer? If you don't make the decision now, you have the chance of not being able to have him because a coach like Pete DeBoer, then you have also the possibility of multiple teams needing coaches and going after him depending on what happens at the end of the season. So I truly believe that this was a time where Vegas made a decision. Kelly McCrimmon decided this team is not doing what we expect it to do. He made the call. Pete DeBoer is an excellent coach. He got rid of an excellent coach, but that excellent coach wasn't getting what he needed from the team that's on the ice.
It just shows you how expendable coaches are, right? I mean,
fired, right?
It is just incredible, just the length. It's probably worse in this sport than in any other sport, the longevity, the tenure of coaches, and it just blows my mind that you could be out of a job with just which just been unbelievable. I don't know what the expectations were in Vegas going into the start of the franchise. I think they've exceeded it. I do think that they've underachieved so far this year, but it's just interesting. They haven't fallen completely out of it. They're not the San Jose Sharks. They're not the Senators. They're not the Red Wings. They're a team that would still make the playoffs today and can still get hot and win the Pacific Division. That conference is so wide open, but maybe it just comes down to, as you said, that they liked DeBoer. DeBoer was available. He had success in Florida, took New Jersey to a Stanley Cup final, took the Sharks to the Stanley Cup final, and maybe it's just, hey, here's a chance to upgrade in a position. So I think Gallant will fall on his feet. There's the Seattle job that could be available very soon, and there's other jobs that certainly could be available. But maybe it just came down to that.
And, you know, the tone really does come from the top in Las Vegas. We know that ever since there was a team awarded to it, that their owner, Bill Foley, he stated that they were going to win a Stanley Cup within the first few years. And then look what they did. They went to the final in the very first year. So they have very high expectations there. But I will make a note. My first job was working in Brandon, Manitoba, covering the Brandon Wheat Kings. And the owner of that team is Kelly McCrimmon. I've known him for about 20 years. And when I was covering his junior team, which I did for multiple years, and I get that that's junior and this is the NHL, but it speaks to his mentality. When his team was not performing, he was not afraid to make a coaching change. He made multiple of them, including Mike Kelly. Mike Kelly, who was the assistant to Gerard Gallant, was also a coach for the Brown and Wheat Kings for Kelly McCrimmon's junior team. He's gone as well now with Gallant, which says to me that probably Pete DeBoer is looking to bring in an assistant. It'll be interesting to see if he brings in Steve Spott with him, who was also let go in San Jose. But Kelly McCrimmon makes these decisions, and he goes for them. And he's not afraid to make a risk. He's a competitor. He competes at the highest level, and it's probably why he's excelled so much in Vegas under Bill Foley, who wants that type of mentality. So for me, that's just a little bit of a nugget. It was interesting for me to see that Ryan Craig survived. Ryan Craig was a former captain of the Brown and Wheat Kings, which again are Kelly McCrimmon's junior team, so there's a long-standing relationship there. So it was interesting to me to see what assistant survived, that Mike Kelly is gone, and most importantly, that Gerard Gallant, fantastic coach, is out the door. But now we start to think, you know, Ron Francis sitting in Seattle, yeah. You're looking for an expansion team. You need a guy who's been there, done that recently. Are you making that phone call quite quickly?
I would think so, because of what he did in Vegas. So he'd kind of been there, done that with the construction of a team and be able to exceed expectations. Because there's a lot of pressure on Seattle, right, Lee? I mean, with Vegas kind of set forth, people are going to look at Seattle and say, can you do the same thing? Now, that's probably unrealistic, but making the playoffs might not be. And to be able to bring in a coach that has kind of been there and done that, I think Francis would be very smart. I don't know what his plans were before today, not knowing that Gallant was available. I'm sure that they were talking to a lot of people. Maybe he had his eye on a certain list of candidates, but I would think that Gallant would be a nice addition to that list if I'm Ron Francis.
I would absolutely think so, and you're completely correct. You know, I almost feel bad for Seattle in some ways because, you know, when Vegas was coming in, none of us expected for them to do what they do. It is just a complete Cinderella story that they went to the Stanley Cup final, and then they didn't drop off. They were still a very strong team last year. They're a strong team this year that's battling for a playoff spot right now. But this is completely shocking to me that Gerard Gallant is been let go. But the good news is, Don, is that, being to Vegas a few times, as I'm sure you've had, it's very easy to get a cab there, unlike when he couldn't catch one last time he was dismissed. So he should be okay that way.
That's a very, very good point. That was so sad. I remember that. But you're right. There's plenty.
The images.
There's so many ways to get out of Vegas. It's one of the easiest places. Airport's very close. So at least from a convenience standpoint, he didn't have to worry about that. Quickly, looking back to last night, and I brought this up with EJ back on Monday, Pittsburgh is very, very scary now, right? I mean, this is a team that has survived the injuries. They overtook the Islanders for second place in the Metropolitan Division. Crosby comes back, and he throws 4 points up against Minnesota in a 7-3 win. I mean, Pittsburgh, in your mind, I would think, has to be in the conversation for a cup, right? I mean, would you put them, with the Washingtons of the world, with the Lightning of the world, with the Boston Bruins of the world, as a team that can come out of the Eastern Conference?
Absolutely, I would. I mean, the fact that 28 games without Sidney Crosby, not just your best player, but perhaps the second best top player in the league, and they're the second best team in the NHL during that span. You add on those other injuries, to their defense, and the fact that they lose a player like Jake Guentzel for the season with a shoulder, and they just find ways to win. And, this is also a team, let's not forget, there's still a lot of players on this team that have that Stanley Cup experience from the back-to-back cups for Pittsburgh. But most importantly is I think that their coach needs to be getting a little bit more credit for what he's done. It's unbelievable to me how successful they've been with the injury bug that they've suffered. So full credit to Pittsburgh. But I got to tell you, Sidney Crosby, there's the debates about, where he stands now in the game. To me, I don't know about you, Don, he's still the best. He's still the best. He's still the hardest guy to knock off the puck. He comes in and delivers every night. What he does in the faceoff circle, which people do not appreciate enough, he faces the best players in the league, and he has for over a decade. And he is so consistent. He just, to me, I can't think of a player really in my time covering the game that I look to more just to think what an absolute talent there and just drives that bus in Pittsburgh every night.
It's just incredible. And he and Ovechkin are the two players that jump to mind that I think could have played in any era. He and Ovechkin have put up points that are going to be very similar to guys that played in the 70s and the 80s when the game was much different and was a little bit more wide open than it is now. But and when you think of when those guys came into the league and the adjustments that were made, but I think they've overtaken any kind of expectation. They seem to just not go away. right? I mean, obviously they're two different players. Ovechkin's more of a pure goal scorer, where Crosby makes players around him better, but they don't seem to let up. Now, and Crosby's faced adversity. He's faced the concussions. He's faced serious injury and has always found a way to be able to bounce back. He's getting older now. He's north of 30, and this is supposed to be when your skills are diminishing and your injuries are a little bit more nagging and don't go away. And he seems to recover, come right back, and it's almost like he didn't miss any time at all.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, you think about Pittsburgh and the time of year in which they're starting to play this way. And when we think about the teams that go on to win the Stanley Cup, it is that New Year mark where teams start to get hot and take off. And that's what people need to pay attention to. Compared to perhaps a team not trying to take too much away from Boston, they've been spectacular this season, but they've started to struggle now a little bit. More inconsistency. They now have the concussion to Rask, what they will do with that, how that will affect them. But, you know, suddenly Boston, who was, you know, 15 points ahead of everyone else, is now getting right in that thick of things when it comes to point production, with Tampa coming for them. You know, Pittsburgh's right on Washington's heels. So the East is going to get very interesting, but it's this time of year, seeing those teams that start to get hot and start to play right at the right time.
Did you have a problem with the Cassian suspension, 2 games?
I had a problem with it. You know what? Yeah, I had a problem with it, because here's the thing. I hate to say this, but, you know, I loved it. I always walk that line of I don't want headshots in the game, but I loved every moment of that, because look what we're talking about. Look at how much energy that put into that game. You know, Matthew Tkachuk, these were clean hits. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. But the fact is that Matthew Tkachuk comes and rolls over him. And the problem that I have is with these snowflake millennial players, as I call them, that grew up in the age where if you decided to put someone in the trolley tracks and take them down and be an instigator that way, and you want to be a big bad man in the NHL and run somebody over, that you can then just turn around, drop, like, put your hands down beside you and you don't have to fight. That's what I had a problem with. And the fact that Zach Cassian got a 2-game suspension for getting up off the ground after he was targeted by, yes, a clean hit, but still targeted, and he gets up to go after this guy, and he won't fight him. So then it looks bad. He should have had to drop the gloves.
Yeah.
The old day, Don, you do something like that to somebody, your gloves are off before they get up, and you're squared ready to rock because you know what's coming for you, and that's part of making that hit. And then for Tkachuk to go back and say after that, well, you know, he shouldn't put himself in that position if he doesn't want to get hit. Don't be a big man with big words if you're not going to go on the 200-foot surface when you're called to. And that's why I have a problem with the 2-game suspension. I get it. It was predatory. But the fact is, it's still hockey. And we can't, to me, I worry about us losing that, because there's a lot of young players right now. We've seen it in Aaron Ekblad. We've seen it before. I believe it was Max Domi, who decide, I don't want to fight. And in the NHL now, you don't have to fight. But if you're going to run over a guy like Zach Cassian, you better be ready.
Yeah, and it's accountability, right?
Absolutely.
You know, this isn't, you know, Tkachuk going after McDavid and then Cassian coming into support of his player. Cassian was the one that got hurt. So if you're going to hit a guy that can beat you up, then you have to file that back in your mind and say, all right, when I hit this guy, I'm going to have to realize that I'm going to have to take accountability for what I did, even if it's legal, and he may come back at me. And does it seem fair to you that a skilled player can say, I can have at a guy, I can lay him out, and not take responsibility for the hit, knowing that that's something that can happen to you? That should be filed away in the back of your mind, that I might have to be called on the carpet for the hit that I'm about to throw. Think of how easy it would be in life if I can just deck somebody knowing that I'm not going to have to pay the piper for it. Yeah, then of course I'm going to have the muscles to go and do that. So I'm with you. Listen, is it ugly? Is it predatory? I guess you can definitely say that. Is it something that's a penalty? But it does seem like that if you're going to get that out of the game, then why should Tkachuk be allowed to hit him in the first place then? I mean, I just think this is the byproduct of the physicality of the game. And it's a lot less than it used to be, but you still have to be held accountable for your actions on the ice. And I think that's what happened the other night.
And the best part about this is when Leon Draisaitl of the Oilers was asked, because Connor McDavid will be on Team Pacific in the All-Star game, and they were asked if they were put on the ice at the same time as Tkachuk, if what they do. And Draisaitl said, I get off the ice. I'm not playing with him. And I have to say, I love that mentality. I love the fact that, you know, this is the Battle of Alberta. That means something up here in Canada. It means something in the National Hockey League. And, you know, it has sparked some interest. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Cassian's first game back is against the Flames.
Yeah, so, and really, but those two teams, it always makes it, you know, a lot of fun. And I listen, everything's an isolated incident, but on that one in particular, yeah, it just felt like that was a natural progression of things, and maybe it was ugly, and I know the league doesn't like the way that that looked, but the two games I thought was a bit excessive. Looking back at some of the games last night, you know, the Stars just continue to impress me. Stars in the West, Lightning in the East, right? Two teams that got off to a lot of expectations to start the season, very slow starts, but are kind of proving to everybody this is a long 82-game schedule, and, you know, a lot can happen. The Stars have had to overcome a lot with the firing of their coach, and then that was a nice overtime win over the Avalanche last night, and I think the Stars are still very much in the conversation as they were last year as a team that could be very dangerous in the Western Conference.
You know, I look at really the Central Division, and I think about St. Louis, Dallas, and Colorado, and I think those are all three teams that I could definitely see lifting the cup at the end of the year. I think they're all that good. I would probably put maybe Colorado and St. Louis a little bit above Dallas.
Yes.
But I look at it, and I really do believe that this is where Dallas should be. This doesn't defy expectations for them. They are that good. They have the personnel to do it. Like you said, they had to overcome the coach. It's interesting to see, has Rick Bonus done enough to maybe earn a shot at being a head coach? We'll have to wait and see, because there's so many great candidates available. But they are responding right now at the right time. But up and down their lineup, they have all the tools, as does Tampa Bay. These are two teams that I think strictly just underachieved in the first half of the season, and now they're playing their brand of hockey.
You know, I got to see St. Louis live on Saturday. I called the Blues-Rangers game, and boy, they were just really impressive to me. And it's not even about the goaltender. Bennington's fine, all right, and he's obviously an improvement from Allen and everybody they've had there probably over the last 20 years. But for them to be as good as they are, and they're going to get Blay back, and they're going to get Tarasenko back, and they're going to get Gunnarsson back, I mean, that just makes it so interesting to me what this team can actually be. They're the right there as the best team in the National Hockey League, and they're going to get better.
The thing about St. Louis to me, Don, and, you know, and I've heard it from several coaches around the league, and we get a chance to see them a little bit more here in Winnipeg because they're a divisional opponent, is how simple their game is. They play simple hockey with talent, and they don't go away from their systems, and it works for them through their structure. And you just mentioned Tarasenko. You've got Tarasenko getting healthy, and I think back to Patrick Kane, the year that Chicago, he was injured, and they went to the Stanley Cup and won it against Philly, and they held him out for a couple extra weeks to keep him off the cap until the playoffs, and they went out and they made a big move at the deadline. And I think you're going to see St. Louis do the exact same thing. Tarasenko, I think, will be held out even if he's ready to go until the playoffs, because once we hit playoffs, right, just in case people don't know, players are playing for free. Like, the cap, everything goes out the window. So the fact is that they can go out and make a big move at the deadline, not worry about his cap hit, let him get super healthy. Think of how fresh he's going to be. And don't talk to me about rest. That'll take 2 minutes for a player like that. And to have those kind of weapons, I think St. Louis is in a very good point, just personnel-wise, to really make some noise again. And I think we could possibly see a repeat. They're that good.
Are you ready for some tweets?
Sure, let's do it.
All right. Well, this is an interesting one. Forever TH says, what's the best case scenario for the Leafs at the deadline? And what about Phaneuf as a veteran minimum pickup on defense?
Minimum pickup, minimum worth, perhaps? I don't know.
What's he even doing now? I mean, he isn't playing in the NHL.
Yeah, and this is a guy that, you know, with Dion Phaneuf, that lost his foot speed several years ago. I mean, he's familiar with the Toronto market. He was playing there for many years. He was brought in by Brian Burke back in the day and made captain. But I don't necessarily know if I'd go down that road, but I would agree that they have to do something on their defense. They have some big-time injuries to big-time players, Riley Muzzin. Those are absences that, you know, are painful to them. But, you know, the thing about Toronto is I don't really know how to get a read on them. This is a team that has so much offensive skill. And you look at Matthews last night getting his first hat trick since his NHL debut in Ottawa back in 2016. And
right.
Marner's, you know, he's on an 8-game point streak with 11 points. And they have these weapons down the lineup, but it's always been their defense. So I would say that if the Leafs are going to do anything at the deadline, it is going to be on defense, but they don't really have a lot of room to play with. So I really think it's minimal. To me, more importantly, it's that Frederik Andersen, the workload that he has had to have this season. I mean, when they get to playoffs, we'll see how he does because he hasn't, you know, they haven't really had a strong backup. Michael Hutchinson has come in very sparingly. And so it'll be interesting to see how he performs as we get closer to playoffs because this is a lot of hockey for one goaltender to take on.
And the other thing, too, is, yeah, they're going to have to find somebody that they can trust.
Yeah.
To play games. And I know Hutchinson, you know, had a big win, I guess, a week ago. But you're right. Anderson's playing just way, way too much. And a lot of talk about Georgiev. They've seen a lot of Georgiev. He's played against the Leafs a lot over the last couple of years. He's not making a lot of money. They might be able to add him. I know the Rangers obviously don't want to have three goaltenders for any tremendous length of time. Could Georgiev be a fit there in Toronto as a backup to Anderson?
I think really a lot of goaltenders, if they have capability, can be a fit because I'm not quite sure if Toronto has anything. And like, obviously, they don't have anything they feel is sustainable in their pipeline right now, or else they'd be up. I definitely think that could be a move. But I do think that's the biggest discussion point in Toronto is that Andersen cannot continue to play as much as he has. So they need to do something to give him, some rest heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, Georgiev is making less than $800,000.
Yeah, he'd be on an ELC, if I'm not mistaken, just because of his youth.
So
he would be an easy kind of fit there.
Yeah, and I do think that something's going to happen sooner or later with the Rangers and their three-headed monster because it just doesn't make sense from the standpoint of it's one thing not to play. You had back-to-back games where Lundqvist played in the first time in nine, Georgiev played the first time in nine, but you can't dress three goaltenders, which means there's going to be a goaltender that's not going to participate in warm-ups, he's not going to dress, and I just think that makes players stale. And it makes them bitter that they're not playing, and you've got some significant egos. You've got, obviously, Shesterkin, who deserves to play. He was tearing it up in the AHL. He's 2-0 as a starter. And Georgiev has been a better goaltender statistically than Lundqvist, and then Lundqvist is a legend. So everybody's going to think they deserve to play. I think they can get through the All-Star break, Leah, because you're going to have that long layoff. They've only got three games before the break that they can kind of maybe wait until we get to February. But at some point before the deadline, they're going to have to make a move. And Georgiev is the easiest one to move. And that seems to be the one goaltender that can fit in the salary cap structure with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So we'll see if that ends up happening.
We will wait and see.
Shesterkin has been just a lot of fun. He's a puck handler. He's got a great glove hand. I don't know how much you've gotten to see of those two games. I was fortunate enough to call the first game and was at the second one. He is as advertised. He is a very, very good goaltender.
I'm just so impressed that you can handle those names. So
I know.
That's what I'm impressed about.
It's so funny because there's people like within the organization that will say Georgiev, and it's like, I gotta like correct them. So you got Georgiev and, Shesterkin, and Lundqvist is actually the easiest of the three, but,
he absolutely is.
Well, you know, you can call him Igor. Like, he's got a unique enough first name that sometimes you can get away with saying Igor with the save. But
maybe one day once he gets a little bit more cred, he can be like Cher and go by his first name.
Chris asked the question about Ron Francis and Gallant, but we kind of covered that. But his second half of the question is Babcock coaching next year, or does he now have too much baggage? We've seen now what, two coaches get rehired in the same season. Does Babcock fit as someone that's going to be back in the NHL anytime soon?
Well, you know, and that's just the point is that it's crazy because never did we think if you rewind just, you know, not even 6 months ago, if somebody said Mike Babcock is available, how many teams would put up their hands and say, please me? And now that doesn't seem to be necessarily the case. When it comes to sport, I tell people this all the time. At the end of the day, it's a business and winning solves all. So you have to win, and you need the right personnel to do that. And I do believe when the cooling off period ends with Babcock, when things settle down a bit, I do believe he will come back. I don't think that it will stop him from coaching again. I fully expect to see Mike Babcock back in the National Hockey League. Will there need to be maybe a little bit of a PR strategy around it? Yeah, probably. He's going to have to answer for a few things. But at the same time, you know, I always look at Tiger Woods, you know, when I talk about sport and how winning solves all. You know, he was dropped by every one of his sponsors almost except for Nike, and then he comes back, he wins, and all is forgiven, right? So, you know, in sport, that seems to be the case, and I fully expect to see Mike Babcock back one day. I don't expect to see him in a place like Seattle, though, because that's not the type of coach that he is.
He's going to need to do, and I don't know how much you follow the NFL. I'm sure you do. Going back to Tom Coughlin when he was the coach of the Giants, and you know, 5 minutes early meant 15 minutes early, and a lot of the players kind of rolled their eyes. And then he made the adjustment. He got the veterans to kind of buy in, and then they win a Super Bowl. Yeah, he's going to have to kind of tell whoever he interviews with down the road that he's going to be a little bit more of a player's coach and a little bit more of a coddling of the younger players. That's where we're at now, right? I mean, that's as much as I hate, we've had this conversation before about changing who you are for these millennials, but if this is where the league is dominated and this is what's going to help you win, I think there's going to be some old school, but you got to make adjustments and you got to be anew. And I think hopefully he'll make those adjustments because I think he's a hell of a coach and you'd hate to see one negative aspect of his coaching keep him out of the league for good.
Yes, and I don't think it will. I think there will be an adjustment. I think he will be back. But, you know, I will say, though, is that when it comes to adjusting him as a coach, it also depends on what organization you're going to. Yes, some things need to be modified, but this wasn't the same situation as Bill Peters and some of the other coaches that we saw got in trouble. These were some questionable mental games. But, you know, we weren't talking about maybe on that level. And for as many players that might say something negative about Mike Babcock, there's another side to every story. And there's a lot of players who would suggest that he was the best coach they ever had.
Sal sends a tweet. If Leah will be on today, I'd like to propose my rule change for overtime and shootouts. Are you ready for Sal's suggestion?
I'm ready for this. Yeah.
Teams don't get any points at the end of regulation. 10 minutes, 3-on-3 overtime, then shootout. Losing team doesn't get a point unless they score at least one goal in the shootout.
Okay, say that to me one more time.
No points after
the end of regulation.
Just to give you my opinion, I don't think it's worth repeating, but I'll repeat it anyway. All right? Teams don't get any points at the end of regulation. So I guess if you're tied at 5 at the end of 60 minutes, there's still 0 points for each team. 10-minute 3-on-3. I like that because I like 3-on-3.
Me too.
All right. Then a shootout. Losing team doesn't get a point unless they score at least one goal in the shootout. So I guess you have the same format. You'll get the 2 and the 1 depending on what happens 3-on-3. But if you get to the shootout, still no points for either team. The winner gets 2. The loser gets 1. But if he gets shut out in the shootout, they get 0 points.
So basically rewarding the skills competition for having a really good goaltender. If that goaltender can stand and not let any goals in, then the team earns the full, that other team doesn't even get one.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, listen, the whole concept of this is, first of all, trying to make it so that teams don't go, okay, we're tied at 2, we've got 3 minutes left, we're both going to get a few points here, and we need those points, so we're just going to skate it out.
Right.
That's what we're trying to do here, right? And that's why, you know, you mentioned the 3-on-3, and I think that's the best part of it, of this rule change, is the idea of extending the 3-on-3. I truly believe, I mean, I've been told by coaches when I've talked to them about 3-on-3 that they feel 10 minutes is too much. It's too much and it's too taxing on the players. But a lot of the players and coaches around here discuss the fact from 5 to 7. Because if you had that 2 extra minutes, it would be interesting statistically to see how many more games would be solved in overtime than in the shootout. So I'm a big fan of extending that 3-on-3, not just because I absolutely love it, and I've been a very big advocate of it, as I know you love it as well, Don, because it's so exciting for the fan, but I do think that we would see more games end in overtime if we extended it by a bit. Because of anything, just the fact that teams are going to get more fatigue as that goes on, and that means a mental mistake or just a physical mistake will likely be made and a game will be solved.
Yeah, you might make the case that the end of regulation teams are kind of just skating for the point, but I don't see that in the 3-on-3. I think everybody's going for it. Yeah. I just want more 3-on-3, and I'd like to avoid the shootout at all costs, and I still would hate to see a team play 65 minutes of hockey and just because they end up not scoring for whatever reason in the shootout, they come away with no points. I would be very unhappy with that. It just puts a little bit too much onus, as you said, on the skills competition. Goalie stands on his head, and now a team played 65 minutes and gets nothing. I don't think that would be a good idea. This was a lot of fun. We threw a lot of different topics at you. I know that's what you enjoy.
Yeah, some days if I have something to say about it, yeah.
No, and you always have everything to say.
Yeah, well, I talk a little too much sometimes.
No.
But, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah, so we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Don, you take care. And, we'll probably be talking about another coach being fired because that just seems to be the theme of the NHL season this year.
And if you can't get enough of Leah, you can follow her on Twitter, LEAHHEXTALL. And you can shoot her some tweets and have conversations with her until we get back together again next Wednesday.
Absolutely. Love to hear from people.
All right. Enjoy your week.
All right. Sounds good.
Great, great hockey person. And just I love I can just throw anything at her, and she seems to be able to handle it. I had a few Ranger tweets, so I figured I would just take them here on my own. Mike Devine says, Rangers will be in great cap shape after the 21 season as Stahl, $5.7 million, Smith, $4.3 million. Lundqvist, $8.5 million are gone, plus Shattenkirk's dead money drops to $1.4 million. Could the Rangers trade Kreider now and push to sign Landeskog, who will be turning 29 during the 21-22 season? Yes. I mean, I think right now JD, Jeff Gorton, Chris Drury, Glenn Sather to a certain extent have put themselves in a situation cap room-wise where they're going to be very aggressive in free agency, and we do know that they are a destination for teams, a la what Panarin's been able to do, and I think Landeskog would be a great add as well. Kreider, push comes to shove. You look at the New York Rangers, they're still mathematically alive for a playoff spot. As right now, we get ready for play on January 15th. The Rangers have 48 points. Philadelphia has the last wild card spot at 54. So you're 6 points out of a playoff spot with a game in hand on Philadelphia. You've got 2 games in hand on Columbus that also has 54 points. You've got a game in hand on Florida with 53 points. You've got 2 games in hand on Buffalo with 49 points. My point being is the Rangers are a lot closer than, when you look at 6th place in the wild card. They're a +1 goal differential while you got Buffalo as a -9. You've got Columbus as an even. If push comes to shove, I don't think the Rangers are making the playoffs. We'll get a little bit of a clearer picture at the end of February when we get to the trade deadline. I think they're going to trade Kreider. And they want to be able to keep D'Angelo for sure. He's obviously somebody worth keeping. So let's not forget that. There's guys that they have to deal with. What do you do with Jesper Foss? I think it would be a mistake to let him go. I think when this team turns the corner, that's exactly the kind of personnel that you want on your team. So it's not as easy as look at all this cap space. You've got players that are restricted free agents that you're going to want to keep. Kreider seems a bit expendable just because of his inconsistency, but he's had a good couple of years here. But somebody's going to have to go, and it looks like the odd man out would be Kreider. But I'm not sure that the cap space that you lined out there is necessarily going to be as steep as you think it is just because of the fact that there are guys that they're going to have to address that they're going to want to keep that are also going to demand raises. Tim says, realistically, what is Kreider's worth trading for? I understand selling him at the deadline, but I feel like Ranger fans will lose confidence in the rebuild if they feel like the trade is lopsided. We don't want another Nemestikov situation. Listen, I don't think so. I mean, when you look at what they got back for Hayes, I think you have to be very happy with that. And Hayes is kind of in the same situation that Kreider is in here. So I don't think they're going to get robbed by any stretch. And remember, even if it doesn't look equal on paper, it's the freedom that you do get from trading him away that I do think leads to freedom with the cap space like we were talking about before. You could just let him walk in free agency, but then you don't get anything for him. So I'm not sure the value will be necessarily equal, but to get something back for a player you don't intend on re-signing anyway, that's still value, and then what freedom now you have that he's gone because I do think the Rangers are a destination for a lot of free agents. There's a lot of talented players that will become free agents in the next couple of years that the Rangers certainly can add to the young players they already have here. I think the Rangers' future is very bright. NJM says, any word if the Islanders will actually seek out a forward prior or during the deadline? Absolutely. Lou has a history with New Jersey. If he feels he's got a team that's close, he will make deals. You saw him get Doug Gilmore. You saw him get Dave Andrechuk. You saw him get Alexander Mogilny. You saw him get Jason Arnott. I mean, the list goes on and on. Joe Nieuwendyk, he went out and got players like that at the deadline because he believes his team is good enough to win. And I think I look at this Islanders team, obviously Monday excluded when they just were awful against the Rangers. This is a good team, and this is a team that in right circumstances can host a series in the first round, maybe win this division. We saw them win a round last year, which was huge. I think this is still a dangerous team. They need something, and if Lou believes they need it, he'll go out and get it. Whether it's somebody that you think works or not, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. He'll be aggressive. I don't think he was last year because I don't think he had as much belief in the team, and now that you're a year removed, they seem to be as good, if not better. And they're going to get Clutterbuck back, and they're going to get Cizikas back, so they are going to get healthier. But these aren't guys that are going to help them score more goals. You don't want to come up a goal short. And you look at that Carolina series last year, that's exactly what happened. They were a goal short in every one of those losses. So I think Lou will be aggressive. He's got a history of being aggressive, and I think there'll be enough players at the deadline that he might be able to choose from, and I think there'll be an excellent chance to be able to add a player at the deadline. Just a couple of games tonight in the National Hockey League. A light Wednesday, but interesting one. 7:30 Canadians home for the Blackhawks, and then the national game at 8 o'clock, the Flyers and the Blues. And we talked about Hart being out for the next 2-3 weeks, so that stinks for Philadelphia. They're trying to hang on to a playoff spot. Rask got hurt last night, so he's going to be out, but I think Boston could survive that with Halak as the backup. So you've got some injuries to have to deal with in the National Hockey League, and also leading to, you know, if these injuries end up being longer than you expect, are those teams that might be in the play for a goaltender at the deadline? Doesn't help the Rangers any, because I'm not sure Lundqvist is going to get traded to Philadelphia or Boston, but heck, you never know. So Flyers and Blues, that should be a good one. I saw St. Louis on Saturday and just very, very impressed. That Blues team is every bit, if not better, than they were last year and should get better with their injured players coming back. All right, we'll talk to you again on Friday. We'll have the top five of the week as well. Talk to you then. You want to get in touch with me at Don LaGreca. Always remember to put the hashtag game misconduct so I can get as many of the tweets in as possible. We'll talk to you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct podcast wherever you get your podcasts.